Hi, everybody. This is Scott Callon. Thank you so much for joining today. I'm joined by Ted Fujita, who is our lead independent director, and Dan Morisaku in finance. I'll be working off of our fiscal year 19-2, so February 2019, a first half corporate presentation, which is on our website. So let's go at it. Starting on page 6 is a summary of what we think of the key points for the first half. As you know, we have a hybrid business model. We have stock earnings, in other words, stable, contractually locked-in earnings that are well above our fixed expenses. In addition to that, we have flow earnings that come in primarily from our activity in selling assets that we have added value to at a profit. You can see stock earnings have been growing across the board. I'll go into more detail on all these points. The first half had a significant string of disasters that we responded to. I'm very pleased to say there were absolutely no injuries or damages to any HO assets or power plants. We have continued to strengthen our financial position, and we are included for the third year in a row in the JPX 400, which, as you know, is arguably the leading index in Japan with respect to companies that grow value for their shareholders. Turning to page 7, OP, operating profit, down 28%, net income down 37%, EPS down 36% year on year. These are not numbers that generally people yell from the rooftop about. Look, to be very clear about this, we don't manage our earnings on a quarterly basis. We do make commitments to our shareholders to grow earnings over the long term, and we make one-year forecasts, so we explicitly don't give a half-year forecast. We make a one-year forecast. So the 1 year is the time horizon where we commit to what we're going to do. And so the good news is things are great. Doesn't look like it from the first half numbers, but we are very much on track. We know what we need to do and what we are going to do in the second half, and so these should not be numbers that worry people. And I'm happy to go into any detail on that in the Q&A. One thing you should know is that net income and EPS was down more than operating profit because we had a fallout. Last year, we sold our building maintenance subsidiary at a profit and generated some extraordinary gains. Those are obviously not repeating this year. So to iterate, our full-year forecast has operating profit up 20%, net income and EPS up 7%. Again, we have the dropout of those extraordinary gains. We reiterate that we fully expect to meet or beat those numbers during the full year. Turning to page 8, you can see what's happened that would explain why we have a light first half, which is to say, across the board, stock earnings, so our stable and growing earnings across all segments are growing. So base asset management fees are up 15% year on year. Rental income in the value-add business is up 11% year on year. Power generation revenues and clean energy, we've had brought in 7 new plants, are up 237% year on year. And so what explains the light for staff is, in the middle, gains on sale are down 50%. And let me kind of turn to, I'll jump ahead just a little bit in the presentation, if you will, to page 16 to kind of go at that. Sometimes we have earnings that are more in the first half in our flow, and sometimes we have earnings more in the second half. So if you take a look at page 16, you can see fiscal year 2016, flow earnings were relatively light in the first half, and then we had a very big second half. The years, fiscal year 2017 and fiscal year 2018, were the opposite. We had very big first half, and then we had very light second half. So what I'm telling you is this year is a version of fiscal year 2016, light first half followed by a very, very strong second half. Anyway, I'll go back. Let me go back to where we were. So page 8 shows that, you know, the core earnings in the business based on our stock earnings are growing. Flow was light in the first half, and as I said, we'll make up for that in a second. Page 10 begins to introduce in detail the stock and flow earnings model that we have. You can see in the first half we had 8.2 billion yen of stock earnings. We had 4.2 of flow earnings. The right-hand side shows the forecast, so the implication is we only did 4 billion of flow earnings in the first half, and that we're going to need to do 11 billion in the second half. Yes, that's exactly right. That's what we need to do, and that's what we'll do. Page 11 turns to One thing that's really important to understand about our accounting earnings is that we believe that they actually under describe our full economic earnings. So we buy assets. Our core activity is to preserve and improve real estate. We improve those assets. We only get accounting recognition of those improvements and the increase in value add when we actually sell the assets. So what that implies is over time, you have continuing growth and unrealized gains that are effectively our earnings bank for future periods. So it is a very good thing that, as you can see on the page, that we continue to grow those unrealized gains, and they will appear in our future accounting statements when it comes time to sell those assets. Page 12, where we describe how value add drives durable value growth, then explains that those appraisal gains that we just showed you on page 11 significantly underestimate the actual gains that we generate, which is to say these are third-party appraisals, but they are conservative. So as you can see, in 2016, we generated 2.2 times the implied gains from the appraisal, third-party appraisal. 2017, it was 1.6x. In 2018, the blowout was 4.4x. Year-to-date, we're 1.8x. You should expect, in general, that we'll come in at double of what the appraisals think in terms of unrealized gains. Page 13 describes our financial position. As you know, we believe it's incredibly important to borrow cheap and long and stably. There has been a drop-off in our average loan period. That is entirely because we introduced a new business, Ichigo Owners, in the last year, which has a 6 to 12 month holding period. It does cost more to borrow for 10 years, and you have to do more fighting with the banks on it. So Owners, we will typically borrow for something that looks more like 5 years rather than 10, so it pulls down our average loan period a little bit. But the core business continues to be a 10-year borrow, and we think that it should be, and that will continue. Page 14 describes a transaction we did recently with Mizuho Bank. This is worth pointing out in part because there is clearly a discrepancy that's emerging in the Japanese financial sector between well-regarded borrowers and not-so-well-regarded borrowers. And as you follow with companies like Tsuruga Bank and with Tateru, the real estate company, there has been, because of problems with loan documents, there's been a crackdown by the FSA and a pulling back of credit to relatively weak counterparties. That has not affected us at all. In fact, it is something that we think will very much work to our advantage, because we have continuing and growing access to very long-term, very inexpensive Japanese debt, and Mizuho Bank, which is not our main bank. SMBC is our main bank, stepping up for effectively an 11-year credit line. Uncollateralized, ongoing, revolving, it's huge, entirely our discretion as to what we want to buy using it, is a very, very powerful statement about how we continue to increase our credit strength and how that is broadly recognized within the Japanese financial system. Let me turn to a description of the initiatives that we continue to take to build a foundation, ongoing value for our shareholders. I turn to page 16. We're going to return there now. I explain the left hand, which is that this is a repeat of 2016 rather than 17 and 18. We had a light first half, and we're going to have a blowout second half. On the right hand side, we give the breakdown of our sales and acquisitions. As you can see, we bought about 10 billion yen more, so we were net buyers in the first half. We bought 23 billion yen of assets, and we sold 14 billion, so we were net add in the first half. In reality, if you look at the breakdown of the acquisitions, though, the residential assets, 10 billion yen were bought by Ichigo Owners. In other words, 6 to 12 month hold. So what I'm telling you is, we've gotten very selective of what we buy, and you can see that in the first half, that the core business, which is the value-add business, we've talked about this before, but just to re-specify it, Ichigo Owners buys assets generally with a 6 to 12 month hold, does a very light amount of value-add on it. It's primarily working as a concierge, in effect, or as a trusted party to go find good real estate assets and deliver them at a relatively low, because that's all we deserve, gross profit, to good investors that are highly creditworthy. So just to be clear, these are not kind of the problematic kinds of buyers who are not creditworthy and are buying things with liar loans, as happened with certain Japanese institutions in the last 6 months. So that's what that business model is. And so it's a very high turnover business. So we added 10 billion yen worth of assets to that business in the first half, and they will go out the door, as I said, in the 6 to 12 month horizon. But in the main business, that effectively means we sold 14 billion, we bought 13 billion, we're actually slight net sellers. And that's not we're not taking a view on risk. I mean, U.S. and Japanese and lots of other stocks globally fell out of bed today. We tend not to take a view. We don't think we should be taking a view. The market's going up, the market's going down. We are very, very disciplined in using our shareholders' savings to add value. But it does reflect the fact that we've gotten more cautious about, is there the uplift that we would want? Is the pricing we would want? And so we continue to have a buy discipline and a sell discipline, and we think that's the right thing to do for our shareholders. Page 17, 18, we turn to the clean energy business. Clean energy continues to scale rapidly. What we've got on the page is we've got 82 megawatts currently producing. We have another 66 megawatts that are in development. At this point, we think are highly likely to get done this year. Pipeline of transactions that would bring on new and development plants is about 50 megawatts. So we currently have about 150 megawatts that are done, either currently producing or in development to produce over the next few years, and we expect that to grow to about 200 by the end of this fiscal year. So growth continues to be robust in that area. Page 18 gives some detail on our expansion into wind power. We expect to come online with our first wind power plant in the Yamagata Prefecture in the north in December 2019. The economics are incredibly powerful. We expect to get an NOI yield from this operation of 12%. We've chosen this time to go into kind of slightly more in-depth in a single topic in terms of new business. This is what we're doing in the hotel space with our lifestyle hotel entry. I'm happy to talk about any of our other initiatives that include Ichigo Owners, and includes the storage business, and includes our work on an AI-based hotel revenue management system. So all these things are ongoing, and because they have dropped out of the presentation doesn't mean that nothing is happening there. Good things are happening. But we want to give some focus to this area. As of last quarter, we were calling this a boutique hotel, and the category called lifestyle hotel has gotten recognition globally, so we've switched the language to reflect that category. So it is one and the same, though. And so let's kind of talk about what we're doing. Again, the offer is that, you know, people naturally want to stay in places if they can that offer something more than a box, and they're willing to pay for it. And so I'm going to give you some data on it, but the challenge in Japan is that there are lots of places to stay for $80 a night that are a box, and there are plenty of places to stay for $300, $400, $500 a night, and there's this yawning gap in between. And that gap, you know, we think can be filled with a very cost-effective lifestyle, I'll give you a definition of a lifestyle hotel offer, and that's what we're currently doing. So page 19 shows you some data on the growth in global tourism, and the key takeaway is it's growing very rapidly, and it's growing even more rapidly in Asia. So that's the good news. There's lots of demand. Page 20 shows you what the supply looks like relative to people who want to stay in lifestyle hotels. It turns out in New York, which is clearly on the leading edge of this, about a quarter of hotels are this space. Los Angeles and London, about 7%. Paris is 10%, and both Tokyo and Osaka are less than 1%. So this is, as we said before, it is significant, we think, latent and unmet demand. You know, we think the economics are extremely powerful both for us and for travelers. So again, If the gap is the budget hotel costs 80 and the luxury hotel costs 300, to be clear, our offer is on the order of something like $120 to $140 a night. So without any question, very compelling price point for what you get. And page 21 and 22 gives you some color on what you do get. And that, I told you I'd give you a definition of what we mean by lifestyle hotel. So it's high-quality interior design, aesthetics, comfort, and functionality. I would strongly encourage any of you who are in Tokyo or coming to Tokyo to at least go, and if you want to stay, in the not Tokyo Shinjuku, which is our second not offer. The first one is in Yokohama. It is, I think you will agree, and we take all sorts of feedback on all sorts of forums, including online, and I'm happy to take it directly. It is a very compelling offer. It is something that offers very substantial value. So anyway, it is the quality of the offer and the environment is something different from your budget hotel box. We work hard in providing experiences and opportunities to connect with the local community, which is to say this is not a chain. Our hotel in Yokohama reflects the neighborhood and the ambiance and the history of Yokohama. That is true of our hotel in Tokyo Shinjuku. It will be true of the hotel, the not hotel we're putting up in Hiroshima. It will be true of the hotel we're putting up in Sapporo. This is not meant to be, this is not McDonald's, and there's nothing wrong with McDonald's, but this is, it will be a unique experience at every hotel, and we think that's an important part of our deliverable to our guests. And finally, it is a friendly ambiance and Japanese hospitality, which is to say Japanese hospitality is wonderful, and you can get that very, very easily and well in Japan. The friendly ambiance thing is the luxury hotel positioning in Japan is a little bit kind of like stiff and very kind of high-end, and you're there, and please whisper. This is a much more kind of friendly and open and integrated with the community. And I'll say it again. Go to our now hotel in Shinjuku, and you'll understand exactly what I mean. It's a very different experience. The hotel, again, I'm talking about the Shinjuku Hotel, opens onto Shinjuku Central Park. It has a spacious common area. It's got an elegant open and unified space. It is a very nice experience across the board. Page 22 gives you some data and gives you some photos as to how we changed what was a very old hotel that was pretty shabby around the edges. You should effectively think about this as a total structural transformation of the hotel. New HVAC, meaning heating, ventilation, air conditioning, new plumbing, new seismic reinforcement, fiber optic internet connectivity, space conversions that take things that no one wants into things that people do want. A totally different class of elegance and aesthetics in the hotel. So, again, that's a deep dive in an area that we're beginning to put resources in. And I'm happy to tell you that both the Knot Yokohama, which opened last year, and Tokyo, which opened in August, are going extraordinarily well. So there's clearly, the goal is to find an unmet need and to attack it. Sometimes you end up realizing there isn't an unmet need. It is very, very clear that we're delivering something, a service and a product that people want. Turning to page 23 and 24, we give some data on our increasing recognition for sustainable real estate. Just to be clear, we think sustainability needs to be and should be at the heart of our business. We are a sustainable real estate company. We actually believe we are Japan's leading sustainable real estate company, meaning that the fundamental culture and business model of the firm is to participate in real estate in a sustainable way when the existing model here, we believe, is unsustainable. Meaning that Japan historically has done the building is 25 years old, tear it down. It turns out it's incredibly wasteful environmentally, it's wasteful financially, it's wasteful of human talent that is necessary to do the tear downs and the rebuild. You think that model is fundamentally unsustainable, and we are seeking to replace it with any and all partners who want to join us with a sustainable model. As part of that, it's enough to say it. It's worth verifying, and we today will be an example of that. It is called a Q&A session, but really we want to have any questions and any and all feedback. We do seek input from external experts to verify that we're on track, and so as you can see on both 23 and pages 23 and 24, we are beginning to increase the number of certifications of our buildings for their sustainability. Page 25 touches on disaster response and recovery. Again, to reiterate the point, this has been a tough year for Japan from the perspective of natural disasters. We believe you should expect, given Japan's geographic position, to have natural disasters, and you should be fully prepared for it. The good news is, we think broadly Japan does a very good job on this, and it's our job to be best in class. Our assets are robust. Our BCP, our business continuity planning, and our response is robust. If you are an Ichigo asset, you should expect real-time and do get real-time response from engineering teams. The goal is to serve our tenants. We support and care for our people, those who rely upon us first, and we'll turn to assets next. Both are important, but if you have to make a choice, we choose people. So that is something that is increasingly becoming understood about what it means, and it's part of our fundamental deliver and Ichigo quality that we deliver, not just to our tenants, but Japanese society in general. And on page 26, again, for the third year in a row, we were selected from the Nikkei Index 400 inclusion, and we fully expect that to continue. So those are my prepared remarks. At this point, I'm happy to turn to any and all questions or feedback. So let's see. How does that go? We push one for. Oh, I should notice. You push star one for questions, and if you want to withdraw your question, you push star two. So if anybody has any questions or feedback, star one, we're open to that. Okay. We have our first question.
Hi, this is Greg at Point 72. Can you hear me?
Yes, Greg. Thanks so much for joining.
Hi, I have two questions, Scott, please.
Sure.
The first one is regarding the value-add business.
Yeah.
You mentioned that as a firm you had become a slightly more cautious. I was wondering, in the environment, have you noticed a slowdown in turnover in terms of the kind of property presented to you or the number of transactions in the marketplace for the segment that you target? Would be my first question.
Okay.
And the second question, which is unrelated, is you know, with regard to development of shared office companies in Tokyo, one of them being WeWork.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if you guys have a view on how to collaborate with this business model, with this type of business model, whether you see them as potential partner, I mean, just not just WeWork, but similar companies. Do you think this is a business model that works well in Tokyo? I was wondering if you have any thoughts there. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Greg. So let me go to the first question, which is the slowdown or turnover. So, in case I wasn't clear on this, the reason why we've got cautious on buying is because, despite all the headlines, and there have been a lot of headlines in Japan because of these kind of liar loan problems that have emerged in a very small segment of the market, but you know, enough to be important and to initiate an FSA crackdown. Despite all that, there is an overwhelming continuing appetite for Japanese real estate assets. The BOJ continues to be very loose. Credit is very available. Earnings are at record high. The macro fundamentals, with unemployment at near all-time lows and employment itself at all-time highs, suggest that there is, you know, people correctly recognize that you have a solid domestic yield that is effectively very rare outside of high yield, high dividend equities, and that yield is growing. And you can borrow if you're credit worthy at 100 basis points or less, and your assets still yield, you know, 3%, 4% to 5%. So what I'm telling you is the bid is very, very strong. It has not gone away. And that's part of the reason why it's so easy for me to tell you, since we expect to sell assets in the second half, we reiterate that you know, our full year forecast is going to be record earnings, because this is really easy to do. So then you specifically, your question was, has there been a slowdown in turnover? Nope. There are lots of buyers and there are lots of sellers, so we're not getting any indication. Now, I'm not talking about the tiny part of the market, which is non-credit-worthy individuals buying at 110% LTV multifamily apartments in bad locations. That market is a collapse, but that market was kind of, is it 0.3% of the total market or is it 0.1%? It was also so tiny, but, you know, broadly across Japanese real estate, no slowdown activity. Lots of buying, lots of selling. Did I answer your question on that one?
Yes, thank you very much.
So on the shared office issue, you know, should we talk about Tesla? You know, isn't everyone in the world talking about Tesla? I mean, which is to say, the Tesla into the WeWork segue is like, there's nothing wrong with Tesla other than its valuation. Great cars, great technology. It just has a very, very high share price. I think that would be my view on WeWork, is that, you know, very interesting. Is it worth $30 billion or $40 billion or whatever Masayoshi Son thinks it's worth, is an interesting question. So, you know, you should know we have a small entry in the space in two different ways. We actually are running a shared office in Gotanda right now via Centro, our subsidiary that we bought last year. We're running, I think we're now up to 7 Ichigo layout offices, which is kind of a get venture companies and put them in a place that's very easy to move in and out of, which is a slight variation on the shared office. But we also have started doing shared spaces via Ichigo Office REIT, our office REIT. So we are involved in the space. And, you know, at this point, you know, I tell you, we don't have a view as to whether or not kind of these extraordinary valuations that imply everyone is going to be sitting in a WeWork office 10 years from now are justified. We do know, because we're participants, that there is some demand for this. We also know that overwhelmingly our office tenants would prefer private space, that they don't want to be in shared spaces, that there is something about privacy and having something for your own and the lower costs of that over time that are compelling. And, you know, I understand the duration mismatch and possibly the ability to monetize that on the part of WeWork, which is that you lease long and then you kind of sublease short. So I don't know. It's not clear. Greg, I've answered your question other than say that we're involved and are we willing to partner with people? Yes. We have our own direct activity in the area, and we have and we're willing to partner with people. The one thing to be very clear that we are not doing and will not do, and to that extent, we are not WeWork. We care about cash earnings, every single quarter making money. You will not ever get from Ichigo a bet the ranch, we're going to lose $5 billion, but potentially we're going to be worth $50 billion. And so that is our fundamental problem with the business model, is that we're not willing to do massive upfront spend with we think, a potential unknown payout. And that possibly makes us a less interesting investment, and I fully recognize, because our basic position is everyone else is smart and we are stupid. And so we are very involved, and we study these other business models, but that has been the main reason why we're not participants, because none of these are break-even businesses. They are significant loss creators. It is potentially the fact that they're loss leaders and they turn into significant revenue generators over time, but that's the reason we have chosen not to enter the space in any sort of big way. Did I answer your question?
Yes, I guess, you know, my question was more, would you consider leading out to WeWork for them to kind of sublease to their tenant? Do you think this is a partnership that could work? Because, you know, I guess my understanding of the business model, you know, is they, as you said, they have duration risk. They compensate for that by maybe leasing on a more expensive level per square feet, per square foot. So I'm wondering if, you know, you would basically lease to them on a master lease basis or not in the future, or is that not really...
Yeah. So look, I mean, without going into specific details as to who we've talked to in this space or not, we, you know, we've talked to people. Greg, we're running at 99% occupancy, something like that. I mean, that's the order of magnitude, right? I mean, we are so tight with our office space. So to be very clear, as a landlord, it is a landlord's market. Kind of some of these guys who show up and say, you know, we want to do this, and it's going to be, we'll share the upside, and of course you own the downside. We have not found those terms attractive. So are we willing to do kind of partnerships with people that we consider true partnerships with economics fully scoped, and we're willing to take some risk on it, but this risk is worth taking because the reward is significant? Absolutely, yes. We will be hard-headed. There's no pride here. If somebody has a good offer, we will do it. We're happy to kind of do WeWork or whatever. But at the moment, we have not found the propositions that are available to us attractive. And so we haven't done anything other than, as I say, we have some initiatives of our own that we think are primarily kind of exploration and basic research in the category and are generating decent economics.
Okay, great. Thank you, Scott.
Thanks. I'm happy to take another question or comments or feedback. Again, star one. This is going to be a going, gone. We have a question. From Pelagos, is it Mike or Richard? Wait, we're going to bring you in. Are you on?
Hi there. Thanks for the presentation. Just had a quick question with regards to the traditional value add business and the asset owners business. What is the balance between the two right now, and has it affected the sell through of assets between like first half and second half?
The owners is very small. Order of magnitude is going to be, I'm going to look at the, I'm going to pull an actual number for you. It's going to be 10% or less of the contribution in the value add business this year. So overwhelmingly continues to be the so again, the key differentiation is owners tend to be a six to 12 month hold, and we're probably more like 2 to 3 years in the core value add business. And has it affected? So given that's the case, that it's rather small, it hasn't had any particular impact. We do expect to see an earnings contribution in the second half. We do think from owners that they've accumulated about 20 billion yen of assets. You'll see them going out the door out of profit in the second half. Did that answer your question?
Yes. Thank you.
And Scott, this is Michael from Pelagos. We are on the call together. I have a question with regards to the clean energy business.
Yes.
So this is solar and wind.
Yeah.
The feed-in tariffs, the average says it's 32 on solar, and wind now runs at, 22?
Yeah.
At which level of feed-in tariffs for solar do you think is a level that you wouldn't be, let's say, less enthusiastic or not interested anymore?
So you probably know this, but thank you, both Richard and Michael. The reason why a 22 yen wind tariff is very, very compelling is that the so-called utilization rate, so in other words, the ability to convert, the energy source, which is sun in the case of solar, is about 13%. In the case of wind, it's more like 40 for a good asset like this particular asset is 40. So that's triple. So at 20 yen, you get triple the throughput on wind you do relative to solar. You also have some more operating costs. But anyway, that's why the flow through NOI is a 12% on this wind project. So with respect to specifically your question on solar, we can do 18 yen. We can do 16 yen. We are extraordinarily low-cost operator. Everything is networked. We're running this business with about 12 people, and it's, all over the country. And so the reality is that the Japanese government has done a very good job, as they should, of dropping the feed-in tariff to reflect a drop in costs, and which are primarily panel costs and led by the Chinese. Panel quality continues to get higher at very, very low cost. Primarily, it's a cost reduction. It's a small amount of performance improvement of a couple percent a year. So we continue to be in business, as I told you. In fact, we're beginning to grow faster than we did in 2016 and 2017 in the solar business. So the bad news, because you can always count on me to give the bad news also, is because the FIT has dropped, At 40 yen, you put twice as much capital to work, and so if you're getting a 10% NOI on 40, that gives you, you know, twice as much as when you're getting at 20 yen. So the economics we have preserved, the total means you need to do effectively 2 megawatts in 2018 for every 1 megawatt that you're doing in 2014. But it continues to be a very good business. We are very cost competitive, and you know, people actually have dropped out. It's just gotten tougher, and we've got enough scale for this point to be clearly one of Japan's leading independent solar companies.
Understood. Thank you.
Thanks, Richard. I'm sorry, that was Michael. I know. Thanks, Richard and Michael. Again, we're happy to take any or questions or input. That would be star one. Okay, we have somebody from it looks like CLSA.
Hi, this is Will Montgomery.
Hey, Will. Thanks for joining.
Yeah, thanks, Scott. This is I always ask this question. It's always a little bit hard, you know, sensitive, tough to ask. But last time I asked it, it was about, you know, the potential drop down into the solar REIT and the other REITs, the hotel and the office REIT as well. And at that time, it may have been 6 months ago or more, the difference between what the, you know, third party market was valuing all these assets, you know, very competitive cap rates versus, you know, the equity price of the REITs made it, you know, highly unlikely that, you know, it was, you know, your fiduciary responsibility to your Ichigo shareholders, you know, was such that it wasn't going to be economical or it just seemed unlikely. But, you know, the good news is we've got these other third parties that, you know, we can exit from our value add business, you know, at any time and generate our value add, you know, profits. So that was kind of the story, and that was reasonable. So fast forward. All three of the REITs have done, you know, particularly well. I think the solar REITs just about 1.3 times above the IPO price, and the other ones have you know, steadily improved. So is there any change to that sort of condition without obviously being too indiscreet about what you're doing, but are those conditions different? Is there any, just sort of market difference in the market, et cetera, et cetera? If you could just try to make a comment on that would be very, very helpful.
Yeah. So thanks, Will. Look, we try to be candid because it's our job. We're running a public company on behalf of shareholders, and transparency is important. I mean, at this point, Ichigo Green, so starting with the solar yieldco, it owns solar power plants, and so it would need to buy them in the market or from us. It's not competitive. Actually, the private market is trading well above what Ichigo Green is trading. So that hasn't changed from the last time we talked about it.
Okay.
Both the hotel and the office REITs have become more competitive. Their share prices have rebounded. That's gratifying. We thought they were very cheap. We still think they are, which is to say that the office REIT is literally Japan's number one J REIT, the only one that is, I think, about 16 periods in a row, eight years in a row. So REITs have some annual periods have grown its dividend. The office market is tight as a drum. It's a very good operator. It adds value. It's growing its earnings. I think it's trading around its multi-year high right now, and held in pretty well today in the market collapse, which is true of the hotel REIT also, which has rebounded on probably two things. One, it bought back stock to make it very clear that its primary interest is not growing its assets. Its primary interest is serving its shareholders. One and two, and it's become clear that Minpaku, so the Japanese version of Airbnb, it's gotten more regulated and the supply is taken out of the market, so people are really worried about it. It turns out that the hotel offer is important in the context of growing demand. So those two have become more competitive in terms of their ability to buy and have bought assets recently. So that's how I'd position the three of them together. Look, I mean, to be very, again, keeping the promise to be clear, we see our job to serve our shareholders, and we take a very long view. And that means serving the REIT shareholders. And it's our goal to be the best, you know, REIT operator in Japan. And in the long run, we think that's going to get us a premier valuation. So we never, ever, ever sacrifice the interests of the REIT shareholders because it could serve the interests of Ichigo Inc., ICH shareholders. We think that's just wrong. I mean, it gets down to it is wrong. We're fiduciaries. We believe in being fiduciaries. We want to be trusted fiduciaries. We want to build trust in a world where there's a shortage of trust. We also believe that over time, people are smart, and they get that. And that if you demonstrate it kind of through all weather conditions, that you work really hard and you are a trustworthy REIT sponsor and operator, that you'll get a valuation. And so, you know, so the biggest thing that's happened is we've made a fair amount of progress. We clearly are getting a higher valuation relatively. We're not just... And more than what the market is experiencing. It appears to be the case that people may understand that Ichigo is a very good REIT sponsor. By a very good REIT sponsor means we work really hard for our shareholders. We do not sacrifice their interests. In fact, we serve their interests tenaciously through our value activity and through our capital markets activity, which means if the stock is cheap, you buy it back, and you don't issue in a dilutive sense. Does that make sense?
Yep. Thank you. Very helpful. I have a follow-on question, which you've discussed before, but you know, want to know if there's any change. So
yeah.
You know, it's widely understood that there's some supply coming in the A grade space that you know, a lot of companies are saying, well, you know, it's pre-leased or a lot of it's pre-leased, so we're happy with it, but. You know, one never knows, especially as we get into next year and the year after. So, you know, there's definitely some of the, I think, you know, some caution out there. But your space, the B, the smaller floor plate offices have been, like you said, you know, over 99% right now, and there's not a lot of incentive to build new offices those size because of the cost. So you're fairly insulated from that. But, you know, clearly the tactics to fill A grade is going to be to try to consolidate several, you know, maybe subsidiaries of bigger corporations into one floor and maybe pull two or three or four group companies into a bigger office, you know, and they're going to discount and they're going to do their best to, it's a competitive market. So is there any feeling from you, you know, in all the offices you cover, and maybe some of the bigger ones might be more susceptible to this, but in terms of leasing, in terms of negotiations, that the position of the you know, lesser is stronger with that in mind, like, hey, you know, we're going to move unless you do something. Is there any of that activity as far as you're aware of? That would be very helpful. Thank you.
Yeah, it's not happening in our assets. So just to be clear, I'm always at pains to point this out, but Japan has a office classification that's based on floor plate, and thank you, Will, for pointing that out. So A and B does not mean A is good quality and B is poor quality. A is bigger floor plate, B is smaller floor plate, because we have assets that are, you know, and that's part of our offer, and it's a differentiator, that we're in smaller buildings with you know, best-in-class functionality relative to any building. So the key issue, Will, is it's not that people can't move. I mean, they can consolidate, and there's going to be some market for consolidation, although, you know, the point that is our reality, it's a very important reality, is the optimal floor size for a company is the company fits on one floor. Right, so they're not spread over five floors, and those also don't have, you know, the floor cut up into five different bits. Because if you're on one floor, you don't have wasted space of hallways and all that sort of thing where people are sharing things. You don't have security issues. It's like it's your floor, only you. So that's why a variety of floor plates, you know, and most of them small, to serve SMEs, which are small, is going to be the backbone of any real estate, office real estate offer. So then the question is, okay, yeah, that's true, but is it possible people could do some consolidation and movement? And also very specifically, Will, what's happening now is people are moving to bigger floor plates because they're like, okay, we need people. We don't really want to pay that much more for them because it tends to be still a lifetime employment environment. But if we move to more expensive office space and things don't work out, we can kind of kill our lease after 3 years. And so it's not a 30-year commitment. It's only a 2-year commitment or 4-year commitment. And so people are expanding the floor plates that they want. And so, yeah, I mean, and we offer a variety of floor plates. And so we have people going from smaller floor plates to bigger floor plates in our buildings also. But to your question of, you know, what's the impact of the new kind of A supply coming on relative to our smaller floor plates? Well, the fundamental issue is Pertsubo, so that's the Japanese area size, it's 3.3 square meters. Pertsubo, our buildings tend to be, even in Tokyo, 12,000 to 18,000 yen, and the new offers are coming in. They're coming in with a 30 handle at least. I mean, and you know, frequently more like the high 30s, and it's discounted. And for the first kind of, if you're willing to sign for a 10-year lease, so maybe we'll give you kind of, you know, 28 in the first 2 years, and we'll give you 6 months of free rent. But what I'm getting at is it is not at all price competitive, not even close. It's the equivalent of, you know, we're offering, we think, a superb, you know, Toyota, and someone's pitching up with the latest Mercedes. And it's three times more expensive, and for people who want to spend three times more, great, the Mercedes is fine. But it's a completely different market. And that's why we're not experiencing very much effect, because, you know, we take our rents from 18,000 yen to 19,000 yen. That's a little bit over 5%. It's kind of invisible to people who are looking at the market, which is kind of at 28 to 38. And it's also invisible on, you know, would you really like to double the rent you're paying when you take into account both kind of the increase in the Pertsubo cost and possibly bigger space. So, you know, we are a paranoid management team. We worry about all sorts of things, but this is not our reality, and this is a long-term reality. People do not suddenly trade up on massive rents. I mean, if they do a sudden IPO in their venture firm and they're in Shibuya, that happens on a rare occasion, but the broad economy, people are not suddenly saying, I want to pay 70% more. It is a very, and what I'm telling you is Ichigo is extraordinarily compelling price performance offer. We continue, and so what we're doing is we're increasing quality and we're increasing rents less than we're increasing quality. So that offer continues to be very compelling. And we're not experiencing risk from this. That may have been a broad market question rather than each of the specific questions, so my apologies if I answered it more narrowly than you wanted, but we're not seeing it in our space.
No, that's very helpful. Thank you.
Thanks.
That's it for me. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Okay. Thanks. We're happy to take another question or comment. Again, it's star one. All right, I think we're done then. Thank you so much. We're grateful for your time, and it's an honor and a privilege to work for you. Have a good day.